What is up, guys? Welcome to... Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Oh, you're prepared?
I'm super... I'm prepped.
You're prepped?
I'm prepped. I'm going on a little heartburn.
Heartburn?
Heartburn, yeah.
It burns so good?
No, it doesn't burn good at all. It burns painfully.
It just feels...
It burns so painfully.
I'm so sorry.
But... Yeah, it's okay.
So you're prepared for episode number 34 of the Mindcrank Podcast?
Yes.
Alrighty. Well, my name is Connor Bryant. I've got my... heart-burning co-host Maxwell Brown.
Ow. And
Eldritch Moon's coming. Eldritch Moon is...
It's practically here. The moon is out, yeah.
Yeah, it's of. Here. And,
well, the pre-release happened.
Pre-release happened. Sets comes out on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get your mitts on some of these cards that I've been looking at on the computers. I mean, you got to see them last week, but
yeah.
Now you can buy them all. They'll probably... Your pre-orders will ship in the mail on Friday.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful... Beautiful time.
Yeah, it's good. You get to touch some new cardboard.
Yeah, new cardboard has a certain smell, and it's beautiful. It's like Christmas.
I really like the art in the set, actually.
Yeah, the art in the set.
It's so good. It's super good.
Yeah, I mean, they've done, like... I felt the same way about Azo-Ai. I thought that the art was really interesting, and...
Well, I actually really like the... So, I really like the Eldrazi art in the previous block. And this has Eldrazi stuff again. So
yeah, the art is cool. And also, it's just, like, it's a different style of Eldrazi art. Like, the...
Yeah, it's more, like, I don't know, Lovecraftian, I guess.
And, yeah, this is much more... It's, like...
And it's less sci-fi, more horror.
Yeah,
like.
For sure. Which is interesting. I mean, like, it's cool that, like, Innistrad is, like, the horror plane.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to do horror, but, like, a different trope. They got to, like... Do you, like, instead of, like, the 1950s tropes, they'd have to deal with the 1980s and 90s tropes. Do you know what I mean?
Or the 1900s tropes.
Sure, I guess, yeah. I don't know. I'm not well-versed in the fantasy Lovecraftian universes and stuff, but I've heard they're very, very interesting.
There's a lot of, like, you know, a lot of weird made-up words and...
Yeah, like giant
and like just people
beasts.
Going insane and stuff. Like that. That's the main thing that happens is you can, like, can't really tell if what's even happening. Well, like, what's happening, and then narrative is really what's happening, or if it's, like...
okay. That made sense.
Or it's just, like, mental illness, that's, like, a big theme.
Oh, that's interesting. That made sense. I mean, that's... Then the whole, like, Emrakul taking control of people's minds...
Yeah,
is
yeah.
very Lovecraftian, though.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool. I like how magic does this, where it's, like, it gets to play with all these different themes, and, like, pick them up, like, kind of, like...
Yeah, they pick
them
down, and then mess
and then
around.
They can, yeah, and then they can just move on, and it's just, like...
Have Jace investigate it or whatever.
Yeah. They're like, well, we'll go have our superheroes done this thing. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of cool.
For sure. All right, so you want to talk about...
I just like how Jace is kind of like Shaggy and Scooby-Doo. There's like...
I'm not a huge Jace head.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the cards that he's on because they tend to be pretty good. But... As far as the story, I think he's kind of a boring character.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty boring characters.
Nah, dude.
Who do you like?
A Johnny's lit.
A Johnny's cool. He's just literally a giant cat.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 8 feet tall. No one knew this until like then like Journey into Nyx or something. There's a card that has a picture of him talking to Elspeth, and he's just like 3 feet taller.
Just twice the size of an Elspeth.
Yeah, just
2x an Elspeth.
Yeah, that's large.
All right, cool. Do you want to discuss some standard decks?
Oh, I was hoping this podcast would be like our flavor review. What do you mean?
Oh, we're not doing. Yeah, this is not the. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah,
guess, no, we can talk more about the flavors.
Yeah, I guess we can do cards. I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's certain cards that I think we didn't talk about really last week that are pretty interesting.
Okay.
Ishkana. I think we didn't talk about last week.
Yeah, the Graph Widow.
The Graph Widow.
He's a pretty interesting card.
I think this is interesting. Is like a lot of people are super high on this card. Like they think it's really good, and I feel like this card could like in the right context is actually like really good, but I'm wondering if that context is going to be after Kaladesh comes out.
Possibly.
Because there's going to be like this card is insane against Thopters. Specifically,
1/2
and is it Kaladesh is like the Thopter artifacty right one. So I'm this card is like I think it's like pretty good now though. It's not it's interesting because it's like Delirium is not that easy to get in Standard. I mean, by turn 5, like, you probably will have it most of the time if you're trying, but like the upside of this card is like not, it doesn't feel like you jump through this hoop to get it, right? And it depends, if you're jumping through the hoop anyway, then I think this card is totally reasonable. I don't know if this is a reason to be playing a Delirium deck.
Yeah, I mean, like, the other reasons are like Mindrack Demon, and I guess like Traverse the Wovenwald.
Well, and Grimflayer. So I think like Grimflayer is much more attractive to me as a card that is a reason to be a Delirium deck as opposed to this card. Like, the payoff on this card, I think, is it's fine, but it doesn't like blow me away. Do you know what I mean? I think like there's a lot of situations where like 3/1/2s are just not going to be all that impactful on what's going on in the game.
For sure. I mean, I think that it's a card that'll definitely like bog down the board and
yes, kind of let you. And it interacts against Avacyn nicely, which is important.
Yeah, because it blocks it, and then you can like chump if you need to. I like this card. It's really good with Eldrazi Displacer.
All right.
Real strong. Yeah, I kind of agree.
If you're comboing off with Displacer, I like that more.
Yeah, which is nice, too, because, like, if you play Traverse, then you can just play, like, one or two Displacers.
But, like, if you just have a ton of extra mana, wouldn't you just activate it a bunch of times and make them just die?
I would prefer to displace it a few times and then activate it a bunch of times.
Okay, sure. We're just getting super...
Just going off.
We just have all the mana and all just the time in the world.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what Standard shapes up to be, because, like, if things like that are really... turn out to be really good, then I think this card definitely has a home. If the ability to block and kill Thopters turns out to be really good, then I think this card will be great.
Mm-hmm.
If the format is, like, a lot of Wraths and Planeswalkers, I think this card is going to be pretty crappy.
Yes, I agree with that. Well, that's interesting, though, is, like... So, I think that, actually, like, one of the good cards in Delirium... is like Mindrack Demon.
Mm-hmm.
That card is like a very pushed rate, and it mills you, and it just kind of does like it does both things you want to do.
Yeah.
So I think that card's really good. What's interesting about Delirium is not only does it affect like the cards you have to play in your curve to get Delirium, it affects like what cards you even have to like put in your deck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of
Delirium
decks have like
deck
two
building.
Like Lilianas or something, so you can mill them or like
just to have Planeswalker. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I think the way you think about it is like. You have lands and creatures, right? Which you're clearly going to play... so you're trying to get to 4, right? So the best way to get to 4 would be to have... well, what is there? 7 different types of stuff,
right?
And then you'd... I mean, so you'd have, like... I don't know, like 8 of each. But obviously that you can't do that because you need 20-something lands in your deck, so, right? So right off the bat, like, you're going to pretty... If you're self-milling at all, you're going to pretty easily have land.
Right.
And you're probably going to pretty easily have creatures because most of the payoff cards, like you said, Mindrake Demon, Grimflayer, and Ishkana are all creatures. So, like, easy to get those two. And then the question is, like, what do you put in the rest of your deck? It really doesn't have to be Planeswalkers. So, like, there's not much of a difference from the perspective of getting Delirium between, like, playing, like, 2 artifacts versus playing 2 Planeswalkers,
absolutely.
Right? You could also go down the route of, like, oh, I'm playing, like, things with multiple types. Hangerback Walkers, I think, obviously, like, that's, I mean, only in Standard for another, whatever, 3 months or, mm-hmm. 6, 4 months or whatever. But that's going to be, like, one of the, I think, the free ways to kind of increase the amount of Delirium hits you have in your deck in order to make it, like, so you're more consistently achieving it. Because, obviously, anytime something has multiple types... It, like, overlaps in terms of your ability to get Delirium.
Yeah, it's in a weird form of, like, card advantage, kind of. Not
yeah,
card
I don't know,
not
card
like,
advantage, but just, like, it's as if you had more
mills.
Types. Yeah, as if it's you like, had more mills
right,
when
if you...
Right, yeah.
If you hit a Hangerback Walker off of a million with your Mindrat Demon, it's like your Mindrat Demon milled 5.
Exactly.
Which is, like, those numbers do matter and are put into, like...
Yeah.
They're contextualized via... They're, like, that's part of the rate that you're paying for is having a mill... And so, hitting multiple types is a huge boon.
Yeah.
And what's, like, to follow up what you said about in Kaladesh, if there's a lot of artifact creatures, which, like, this is kind of, like, a fruitless conversation, but it's just, like, that'll be a lot easier, too, because there'll be more playable artifacts.
Yes, yeah. Although, I wonder if they'll print even a single artifact creature that's better than Hangerback Walker.
I don't know. Who knows? That card's really good.
Yeah, it's a strong one.
That card's been seeing play in all formats.
Yes.
But
so Ishkanah, like, I mean, I think if I was building a Delirium deck, I would put it in. I think this card's really interesting going forward. And that it's like a card to look out for, like, mm-hmm. after rotation, you know. I mean, we've seen that happen a lot recently where, like, cards maybe don't do much when they first come out, but then become, like, pretty important to the format after,
for sure,
after the rotation. And that's, like, this is something, like, something to keep an eye on. Do you want to talk about Nahiri's Wrath as well?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting card. Actually, one question. Do you think Ishkanah is modern playable? Delirium is super easy to get in modern.
Delirium is incredibly easy to get in modern. 1/2
reach creatures are dual blockers.
I don't think this is 5 mana worth of card in modern.
That's fair.
Like I just don't... Because, like...
What if you card reach evolution into it?
I mean, Siege Gang Commander is legal in modern, and no one really plays
that. Well, the thing is, like, so... I've been playing a lot with P and Karandalar a lot in modern, mm-hmm. and that card is really impressive. And this card is...
It's a full mana cheaper, though.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Also, like...
You have to play in a deck that has not just, like, mono creatures and mono lands. You have to have, like, instants and sorceries, and... So it's, like, a Jun... Like, Delirium's really easy to get in, like, Jun-style decks, and I don't know if this is, like, worth putting in your deck.
Yeah, so the thing about... First of all, in Modern, it's really easy to hate people's graveyards, so it's actually easy to keep people off of Delirium. There's
scavenger oozes
everywhere. That's the first thing. The second thing is that this is almost reads to me, in the context of Modern, this card reads to me almost as, like, an affinity hate card.
Yes, but it's 5 mana.
But it's just, like, it's 5 mana, so wouldn't I just play, like, a 4 mana, you know, any number of... Yeah, I would just play any number of cheaper affinity hate cards that are also gonna likewise end the game against affinity. So it's like, okay, I mean, I'm sure this card is acceptable in a mid-range mirror type of situation, but I don't know if, like, that's even in modern, if I'm playing a mid-range deck, I don't even barely want to dedicate any sideboard slots to playing against
the mid-range
mirror.
Because so many of the matchups you play are so, like, hyper, like, so polarized in one direction or the other.
I need all my sideboard slots so I can beat, like,
the
Burn Affinity and, you know, whatever
Infect
else.
And Death Shadow
exactly.
And Dredge and
exactly.
All the, like, all the different decks. I agree. I think just
I'm often in Modern. A friend of mine was talking about playing it in Legacy in
Nykvet?
In Nykvet, yeah. We could play it on turn 2.
Yeah, but you want to play Sigarda Host of Herons on turn 2. Whew.
Well, yeah, but this one, like, you can actually play it with, I think, with Delirium on turn 2 if you, there's some way to do it. It might involve, maybe not, I'm not sure.
Mistress Bubble style?
Yeah, I don't know, I thought there was some way to do it, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, but, alright, so Nahiri's Wrath. Do you want to read Nahiri's Wrath?
As an additional cost to cast Nahiri's Wrath, discard X cards. Oh, yeah, well, it costs 2 in red, I should say. Deals damage equal to the total converted mana cost of the discarded cards to each of up to X target creatures and or planeswalkers.
Okay. So if you discard 3 cards, it deals 3 damage up to 3 targets?
No. It deals damage equal to the converted mana cost, combined converted mana cost of those 3 cards to those 3 targets.
My reading comprehension is very low.
Yeah. This card's... And it can hit planeswalkers, too.
Yeah, it murders planeswalkers.
Yeah. So this card's really weird. It's a red control card, mm-hmm. right? But it wants you to, like, pitch your hand and have expensive spells. This card it seems powerful on the surface. It almost like Bonfire of the Dams your opponent, right? It kills their entire board, including planeswalkers, which is hard to get out of a red card, generally. And also, it kills basically creatures of any size, assuming you have reasonable cards to discard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's not, like, if you're discarding 3 cards, it's like, okay, that's gonna be like at least 6 damage, probably, right?
For sure.
And then, like, even. And, like, once you're at the point where you're discarding 6 damage, if you have excess lands or something, you can just increase the number of targets.
Yeah, you can just shoot more things.
Yeah. So it's just, like, it's not that you, like, can't discard lands. You can't discard only lands.
Mm.
But, also, like, you know, it's not that expensive. You'd use it with Madness, maybe. But I thought it was really interesting with another card we didn't talk about, really, but is Bedlam Reveler. And, like, I think these 2 cards are super interesting. So, like, the idea would be, like, you, Nahiri's Wrath, your opponent's board away, and then you follow up with Bedlam Reveler. You have a bunch of instances of sorceries in your graveyard from discarding them to Nahiri's Wrath, and then you get a 3/4 prowess guy and a new hand of cards to do it again.
Right.
So I think there might be something like a very spell heavy, maybe blue red or maybe even like Grixis, kind of deck that maybe plays something like the Pyromancer's Goggles decks in that we've seen before, like in the Thing in the Ice deck or whatever, like something along those lines. And then, so there's, like, that way to go with it in terms of the Nahiri's Wrath and Bedlam Reveler. But then Bedlam Reveler also fits in a totally different type of deck, which I'm also interested in, which is, like, hyper-aggro blue-red prowess with, like, Expedite, Slip Through Space. And I also really want to play Mirror Wing Dragon in that deck, so I can cast Expedite or Slip Through Space on Mirror Wing Dragon and just draw a zillion. And
Storm Chaser Mage is still in the format.
Yeah, Storm Chaser Mage, definitely. Also, Worf Infiltrator might be a good fit in that deck.
Yeah, their card's actually really interesting. So, like, the looting kind of ties everything together, and, like, you can discard your creatures and, like, make 3/2s.
I guess we should talk, you know, do you want to read Worf Infiltrator?
Yeah,
I
don't think
we
talked about it last week. Yeah, this card has a lot of text. So, this card is actually really good and limited, too. It's a 1 in a blue for a 1/1 with Stalk. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card, and if you do, discard a card. And whenever you discard a creature card, you may pay 2 colorless mana, or 2 generic mana, I guess. And if you do, put a 3/2 Eldrazi Horror creature token out of the battlefield. So, what's nice about this card is it actually synergizes really well with, like, Jason stuff. And I guess it's actually not bad with Bedlam Reveler, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can, like, discard your last creature and pay 2 mana and get a creature. Like,
yeah, and I mean, also discarding instant sorceries just makes Bedlam Reveler cheaper
right,
cast,
for sure.
Right?
This card is, like, it reminds me a lot of Looter Ilkhor.
Okay.
But the Shadow dude.
Yeah,
Sculpt's
yeah, yeah.
a lot worse than Shadow, but it's definitely interesting. In Constructed, though, like,
yeah, I mean,
in some matchups, there will not be any 1/1s.
Yeah.
They'll all have, like, 2/2s and stuff like that, so you can definitely, like...
Yeah, there are definitely matchups in Standard where this guy is straight unblockable.
Which is really powerful.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's not even a bad rate. I mean, the thing that's scary about playing a deck like this is that if your opponent just kills all your creatures and you have nothing,
yeah,
and you have
like
just like
space, that's what
yeah. But you could play. I mean, this is the ideal kind of home for Unsubstantiate.
Yeah, because what's great about Unsubstantiate is like you can have it up to deal with like to protect your creatures, but then also if you like tap out to put something in, they like play a blocker.
Yeah, you
can
just
now your
like,
remand
nope.
isn't stuck. You can cast it, and like you can cast it. It's like the best counter spell to use with a prowessy deck. Because you want to be able to cast spells during combat. Unsubstantiate is also really interesting with Goblin Dark Dwellers, too. It's a counter spell. It's a, quote, counter spell that lets to be Dark Dwellers. Because you can,
yes.
like, remand their thing and then untap, and then Dark Dwellers bounce it.
And
thing.
Dark Dwellers' natural home, like natural fit-in with Worf Infiltrator, natural fit with Bedlam Reveler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all, like, there's definitely, like, a lot of synergistic elements going on here. I don't know exactly, like, how the pieces fit together and, like, which ones will end up in the deck. So, and like I said, like, I think there's actually, like, we might be talking about, like, two decks that kind of overlap, both of with Bedlam Reveler. One that's, like, a bigger Thing in the Ice Pyromancer's Goggles, maybe Nahiri.
Mm-hmm. Nahiri's Wrath.
Nahiri's Wrath.
Like, Tormenting Voices, Magnetic Insights, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then maybe one... That's like Worf Infiltrator, Storm Chaser Mage.
Yeah,
whatever.
All over the ground, trying to topside of like 2 Mirror Wing Dragons or something. Mirror Wing
yeah.
Dragons. And
yeah,
I
so
think that the Mirror Wing Dragon is an interesting card that, like, every time I see it, I just keep thinking about it. I'm like, man, this card just seems so powerful.
Yeah, and also,
in
like,
matchups.
The exact type of deck that would be good against your blue red prowess deck, which is like a black 1/1 removal deck.
Yeah, with like a clock.
Yeah.
And that's really bad against Mirror Weave Dragon.
Yeah, it's Mirror Wing Dragon, right?
Is it? Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's Mirror Wing because his wings are made out of mirrors, and that's why
Mirror
it
Wing
reflects
Dragon?
Everything.
Okay, Mirror Weave is another magic card.
Mirror Weave is actually a sweet magic
card.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
all creatures become a copy of target creature. It's like an aura or something. It's an enchantment or something.
No, it's an instant. It's,
oh,
it's until end of turn, everything becomes a copy of one thing.
That's sick.
And
that's
so
cool.
You just attack with all your Kithkin, and then you turn them all into their biggest creature or whatever.
That's pretty cool.
That was, it used to be like the win condition in Kithkin.
Oh, okay, that's what I was doing. Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. Or you could like make them all like Knight of the Metal Grains or
yeah,
huge figure destinies or whatever.
Yeah, so you make them all your best creature, and then they all, or make them all the Kithkin Lord, whatever.
Oh, Wizen Sen.
Yeah, I'm
trying to say I missed Kithkin. I think that was a deck
that you would have liked.
I would have liked.
I played an insane Kithkin. I don't know how to explain this. It was a Kithkin deck with a Painter Servant. You would Painter Servant name Blue, and then you would cast this card. Oh God,
Thistledown Liege.
Yeah, well, you'd have Thistledown Liege, which would give all your creatures +2/+2 because they're white and
blue.
But then also had a red card in it that would deal damage. It would deal 2 damage to your opponent for each blue or white permanent they controlled. It was like a side. It was supposed to be like a sideboard color hoser card.
Yeah.
But you would just turn all their lands blue, and then they would just do like 15 to them or 16 to them.
That's so weird.
So it was like a combo aggro deck.
Which is one
of my favorite. Like, that's a very rare style of deck that you get to play, which is the combo aggro.
Yeah, the last one we saw that was similar to that was like the Become Immense Terra Battle Rage.
Yeah,
like,
that's a combo aggro deck. I played a combo aggro deck once in Old Extended that was a zoo deck with Swans of Bryn Argol and Chain of Plasma.
Yeah, yeah. So Chain's a lot like Chain of Vapor, where like you deal 3 damage to something, then you can discard a card.
Then the controller of the permanent either the player or the controller of the permanent that was dealt damage can discard a card to chain it back to keep the spell going. But with Swans of Bryn Argol, you would draw 3, discard 1. Draw 3, discard 1. You draw your entire deck.
Mm.
And then
now, was Swans a replacement effect?
Yes. Swans is a replacement
effect. Okay, so you drew the cards while the spell was resolved.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So you would draw your whole deck, and then you would Simeon Spirit Guide, and conflagrate your opponent for the win.
I like
it. It was awesome.
Conflagrate's one of my favorite matches.
And also, like, it was just a zoo deck too, like literally,
yeah,
like Kurt Apes.
Kurt Apes.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. It was like the way I had it built was just red white.
Okay.
And I guess maybe calling it zoo is wrong, but whatever.
No, I understand.
But it would just be really good when you would just have Swans of Bryn Argol and you would just Lightning Helix it.
And just the old,
that was just really good. Like
the old Ancestral Recall of Game 3.
Yeah, like it, Swans of Bryn Argol and just having burn spells in your deck is actually
also
unbelievable.
Swans is like, If your opponent's playing, like, a control deck or whatever, and they're at a very low life total, Swans is actually really hard to remove sometimes.
Yeah.
They're like a bolted draw.
It's also just, like, a totally... It's a 4-power flyer
for
4.
Three, yeah, yeah.
For 4,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's, like, a totally reasonable creature. Chain of Plasma is actually a totally reasonable card also to play in a
zoo
deck.
Yeah, like, Volcanic Hammer.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
it's instant. Okay,
yeah.
So 2-mana instant, right?
Yeah, it's a totally reasonable card. So, like, it was cool because you got to play a sweet win the game combo, and then both of the combo pieces were like kind of reasonable cards
in an
aggressive strategy. Yeah, and that was like the same thing with the Kithkin deck. I remember getting on a tangent about the rare combo aggro decks and the treat.
I mean, they're sweet because once you find them, it's like your opponent's like on the clock. You're like, I'm coming for you. Like,
yeah.
They need to do something very specific to interact with you very quickly.
Absolutely. And then you always have the out of just combo killing them, even
after
they
get
shut down.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I stabilized. You're like, oh, combo. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of decks in Modern like that. Like, Twin sometimes played like that. Sometimes, like, even, like, the Death Shadow aggro deck was like that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call the Death Shadow deck
the combo is between that's Tower Battle. Right?
Yeah, fair enough. It's sad that we call pump spells combos. You know what I mean?
Like Bloodlust Berserk is a combo. We've been doing it since like 96 or whatever. But I think that like the blue-red prowess deck is definitely something that can exist in the format, and I think there's a lot of cards for it. I feel like the last like couple of loops,
it's
like,
crazy hard to build, and I'm not an expert in that kind of a deck.
Yeah, that's like very far outside of our range.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, we could just talk about more Eldritch Revolution, but we talked a lot about it.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't, like, I since the last podcast, I played probably 30 games with an Anaya deck that had that card in it.
Okay.
And I still am just like, man, this card is so hard to build with, and, like, it feels good. I don't know if Modern's set up to be really receptive to the deck, because Modern's, like, it's a Modern's especially, like, fast and linear, it seems like, right now. At least Magic Online is.
Uh-huh.
The Paper Mario game doesn't move that much because people just try to play their deck. But on
on Modo, the linear decks tend to be cheaper, and the Modo deck, like the Modo metagame, I feel is more informed by the prices of the cards than the Paper metagame is.
Yes.
Like,
well, meaning, paper, like, they're more similar.
Well, not even, like, the prices of the decks themselves, but meaning, like, the Modo audience is more price sensitive to when selecting a deck, because as opposed to the Paper audience. Meaning, mm-hmm. like, the Paper audience, a lot of the people just, like, have the cards. Where a Modo is, like, when people build decks, they don't have, like, when people have their Modo collections.
No one, like, randomly cracked a bunch of, like, Modo packs in 2009 and has, like, touch lines. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. You just have to buy every card in the
deck. Right, where on Paper you're like, yeah, I played Standard in Standard.
Yeah, exactly.
And also in Modo, the cards are much more, like, transferable, which is the way that the Modo economy works. Is the buy list sell prices are much closer.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people just immediately sell their cards because they're only losing 50 cents instead of, like, whatever percentage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, on Paper, when you generally, like, you keep everything, because if you sell your cards to a dealer or whatever, it's, like, you're likely to get, you know, 50 to 70% of the retail value, mm-hmm. depending on how expensive the card is. On Modo, it's closer to, like 80 to 85%.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it's like,
because the transaction
is also much more of a hassle to do it in Paper.
Yes.
Like, so on Modo, it's very, like, easy, just very digitalized.
Mm-hmm. You just go to the bots and they just buy all your cards.
Right, exactly. It's much easier.
Not that it's weird that you call it easy, because Modo trading interface is actually awful, but.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I mean, the whole interface in general is awful.
Yeah,
but.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think the trading is.
We don't need to go on the Modo, right?
Anyway, but yeah, so. Eldritch Revolution. We're full of tangents today, apparently. So Eldritch Revolution is definitely a card that's powerful and pays you when it does what you want it to do. But it is a very hard card to build around, because it's just, like, the chains are super complicated, and you have to figure out what cards like to be sacrificed,
mm-hmm.
and you have to figure out what cards are worth going to get, like,
what's worth tutoring up. How hamstrung by the Exile Clause have you found yourself, like?
I mean, Eternal Witness would be a really nice 3-drop to get, except for...
Yeah, except for... This is just that one card. There's nothing else that you would have played.
I mean, I would have played Goblin Darkdwellers and gotten turn 2 Elish Narns or whatever. Like, something insane. Or turn 3 Elish Narns.
Dude, I didn't even think about... You just evolve... You just be, like, 3 into Darkdwellers into immediately... Into 7, yeah.
Good luck, okay. Have fun, go.
Well, I guess I'm glad it doesn't do that, then.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't do that.
I guess
you could do that in Standard.
Yeah, right, because it doesn't do that literally because of Dark Dwellers in Standard. I have to imagine, they don't balance the cards from Modern.
If Dark Dwellers, like, rotated out or something, let's say Dark Dwellers was in Constant Dark Gear, they definitely would have forgotten to put that on there, and Modern would have been broken for a month or two, like, before they banned it.
Fair enough. Dude, I wonder, like, so, obviously, you said you were playing a Naya version.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried at all playing with the like a mono green elf shell? Or
I have not. I was
Allosaurus
watching.
Rider.
Who was I watching? I was watching Jeff Hoodlin's stream, and he was playing something similar to that.
Okay.
And it actually looked really interesting. Because Eldritch Revolution is actually a super reasonable card in the elf shell.
Yeah,
like,
that's
he liked tutor for, like, Heritage Druids and Shaman of the Pacts and Azuris and. Elvish Archdruids.
Yeah, you can just trade in random elf for whatever you need,
trade
right?
Yeah, trade in Elvish Visionary for joining an elite.
Because once the deck has its, like, mana going,
it doesn't care.
Yeah, it, like, basically doesn't care. Like, your creatures that are not the exact one you need are all kind of interchangeable once mm-hmm. you have Heritage Druid in play. So, like, basically, like, any given creature, if you're trying to get a Zuri, like, you're willing to give up any, you know, you're really, like, card disadvantage yourself. It, like, barely matters.
Yeah, and you play, like, 8 mana dorks and things like that. And so, like, it seemed really reasonable on that. And then also, Allosaurus Rider is pretty reasonable to cast in your deck full of mono green creatures. And especially when you have, like, 8 one-drop elves.
Mm-hmm. And then,
did he
turn 2 Iona people?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
If it's something that, like, actually happens in the games, then I'm pretty interested in that deck.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. Like, the deck was interesting. It had Lead the Stampede as, like, a way to generate card advantage. But also what was sick is he had Elishnorn and Iona in the deck, and he just hard cast an Elishnorn one game. He just, like, played, like, a... He, like, had like turn one dwarf, turn two like Dwinen's elite heritage druid, play something else, and then like turn three just like cast Hellish Norn.
How does he make the colored mana?
He just played like Razor Verge Thicket.
Oh, just has green white duels in it.
He just had like Razor Verge Thickets, Temple Gardens, and
Horizon Canopies. Okay,
because the deck kind of wants to play Horizon Canopy anyway.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It was really good in that style deck. So it was. I mean, that's super interesting. And what's nice is like you can board away from that as much as you want and be not super weak to cage.
Were you at all interested in the evolutioning Knight of the Reliquary into Revel Arc?
Yeah, actually. So I was playing some games against like the Bant Company deck, and he just like turn two Knight, turn three combo me. So I was like, okay, that's really strong. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, well, you should just have, instead of the Knight, you should just have the evolution, and you just sack your one drop and go get it, and then you can still do all your things. And then Knight evolve, you can evolve your other threes into Revel Arc, which would get back your Knights.
Yeah, it's sick that really you can powerful. Get back Knight. So it's sick that like the way Knight works is that in the graveyard, it's a 2/2
because yeah, it's, in play though it gets the +1/+1 ability, yeah. But in the graveyard, it's a 2/2 because it's not star. It's like,
right. It's not an attribute setting; it's an ability of the card.
Layering.
I don't think that's layers. No,
it's not. But it's like same idea. But so yeah, I was interested in that. My concern though was like you with that deck. I think you want to play Clutch of Company, and that's like one of the issues I've run into. Like just thinking about the Eldritch Evolution deck is like. You want to play Company, you... Like, a lot of
was,
time...
Was Hooglin playing Company in the Elves deck?
He was not. He was playing Lead the Stampede.
Okay.
That was, like, his, like, way to...
That's his, like, way to get ahead.
Yeah, that was, like, his card advantage.
I mean, clearly, worst card, but maybe that's yeah, the right sacrifice to make if you're playing Elish Norn and Iona. Right. If you're playing that, if you have that.
Well, he also had Allosaurus Rider in his deck, and so he had a lot of creatures that wouldn't get hit by Company.
Right.
So it's hard for him to have enough Company hits.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just, like, getting two Elves sometimes isn't... very good when they're just like kind of blank
yeah
cards.
Yeah Company can definitely be kind of weak, underwhelming sometimes,
right? You want
to
hit two good creatures, not two creatures.
Yeah, and or if you don't get, you need to get your four mana's worth, which you know, and getting two Llanowar Elves is not four mana's worth even at instant speed.
No bueno is the
chance. No bueno.
But so that's what's interesting is like with the Knight Shell, I think you want to play Company. You have creatures that are really good on their own, like you play like mm-hmm. Courser or like you can play like Courser, Knight, Tarmogoyf. You can just play all these different cards. And that there's a lot of Bant shells that have had all these different cards. And so if you play Company, Eldritch Evolution, and Retreat to Coral Helm, and you probably want some Path to Exiles, you're running out of... That's too many.
Right,
too many
non-creatures.
So it's hard to fit them all in because one of your creature pieces is a non-creature enchantment that you mm-hmm. can't tutor for.
Well, what about going like that, like a more value based, like not playing Retreat to Coral Helm and like playing a more value based Knight of the Reliquary style deck? Like, is that just, you know, is it just you have to have a combo? You think?
Well, the thing is just like, why not have a combo? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the Eldritch Evolution is just so good at getting combo pieces.
Fair enough.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I really like about it. And so it's like. Why not?
Yeah, it's just a gross tutor. Okay, that's fair. I guess a lot of the power of the card is in its ability to find specific cards as opposed to its ability to, like, cheat mana. So, I mean, there's, like, two sides of this card, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It can be, like, a Black Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, Black Lotus, Demonic Tutor. And do you want to try to break the Black Lotus side, or do you want to try to break the Demonic Tutor side?
Yeah, and it's hard to do both. It's hard to build a deck that can take full advantage of both sides of
and
it,
and then
right?
still
That's
function when you don't have
exactly.
Black Lotus, Demonic Tutor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I'm very, like... I think, like, the Allosaurus Rider road is really promising. That's the one that's really breaking the Black Lotus side of it, right?
Yeah.
Which is like...
It's more than Black Lotus. It's something else.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're literally, like, playing your entire hand by turn two in order mm-hmm. to get an unbeatable creature into play super early. And, like, those kinds of strategies are... I mean, they're not... It doesn't lead to, like, fun games of Magic, necessarily, but they... are, like, an important part of deck building, right? Like, they're...
Yeah, it's definitely... So, like, you have to...
You have to go down that avenue.
Yeah,
you have to go down that avenue and say, like, okay, this is the grossest thing I can think of. Let's
do this.
Let's do this, man. Let's... Let's jam it.
Right.
All
right.
We'll take this to a tournament. We'll beat everyone, or we'll lose, and we'll find out. Like, and you have to, you have to do that. You have to go down that road, or at least test it.
I mean, think about like the Grishol brand, Rain or Death, and like Bob Huang and those guys played. They just savaged that tournament because they just like found something that no one else found, even though his cards have been out for like years. And they just like just savaged the tournament. They just had like two dudes in top eight and like another dude like top 16 at Grand Prix, which is insane. Like,
yeah.
And
yeah,
so like you have to, when you're deck building, especially when you're like, yo, this is distrusting what this card can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd be remiss to not try that.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, instead of putting in turn two Ionas, I was like, man, I can't wait to tutor for Thrive Test on turn three. You know what I mean? Like, and man, that sounds gross, but it's just like,
yeah,
I could have been playing turn two Ionas instead. Like,
exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously playing Thrive Test ahead of schedule is attractive, but like just ending the game is real attractive. Iona ahead of schedule. Yeah, yeah. So do you want to talk about another potential green combo card in the set that we didn't touch on last week?
For sure. So I think we talked about it a little bit, but
did we just touch on it? We were just
speaking of deck building of sick gross combos, man, Splendid Reclamation. The put all your lands from the graveyard into play.
Yeah, so how do you like, what is the, is this how a we self bust it? Yeah, how what do? Wake up, see this, what do? Like, so we started, like, if I was just building a deck and you told me I had to, okay, you know, if you were like, Max, build me a modern deck, 60 cards, has to include 4 Splendid Reclamations, what would you recommend? I have an idea of what I would do. Do you have an idea of what you would do?
I think the Prismatic Omen Shapeshifts angle is really interesting. For modern, right?
Yeah, okay. For modern.
Yeah,
I don't know how much. I mean, maybe this card has combo potential in center. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, you can just, like, Magnetic Insight, Tormenting Voice.
And just play, like, what, a ton of man lands or something? Like, what's the payoff?
Well, you just cast Emrakul and, like, Willem.
You just
use them as ramp spells. And then what it does is it gives a lot of consistency to your deck because you just, like, discard these.
That get more lands. I kind of like the Emrakul angle because of how cheap it gets, right?
Well, it's super cheap, so listen to this, right? It's super cheap. This card's actually really good with Vessel of Nascency. Cheaper.
Is that
this card's also, like, so if, like, I don't know if your mana can work, right? But a card that in standard I'm always, like, trying to put into my deck, despite the cost of it, is Ruin in Their Wake.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, Magnetic Insight, Tormenting Voice is really good at putting Ruin in Their Wake to play. Also, you can play Evolving Wilds to do that. Also, maybe you play Crop Sigil. Like, this card also seems insane. Like, you just mill a card each beginning of each of your turns, and then somewhere down the road you just have Delirium and you just crack it and get back, like, Sanctum of Ugin plus Emrakul and just, like, cast it. Like,
yeah, so is the plan literally, like, turn 5 Emrakul with this deck? That's achievable, right?
So your Emrakul probably costs 8, so you have to put in, like...
Well, your Emrakul probably does not cost 8, right? You need, like, every type.
Oh, it probably costs 8. 9. Right?
Yeah, it probably costs 9 or 10.
So you
but
put, you like,
need
4 to 5 lands into play.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's doable. Also, Shrine of the Forsaken Gods is insane when you do this. Like, and you can find them. Like,
well, nice. I mean, the Crop Sigil puts an enchantment in. Yeah, I'm kind of interested in this. We started this conversation with, like, a modern deck.
Yeah.
But then we just started talking about standard, and now this card seems super fascinating to me.
Right. I mean, I think this card, like, this is one of those cards, every time I look at it, I'm like, there's something here. I know there's something
here.
Like,
yeah.
There's something.
It's the thing that's scary about it is
when it's off, it's so off. It just does nothing.
It does nothing, but not only that, but it's like, I cast my Splendid Reclamation in standard on turn 4. I have a bunch of tapped lands in play, and it's turn 4, and I've played nothing but Magmatic Insights, and I just pass the turn, and I'm just dead, right, some percentage of the time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, but the thing, too, is, like, you just
play... Is Fog legal?
There's probably some version of Fog that's not one mana that's legal. But, so, like, you could play, like, Kozilek's Return and mill those, and then mill, like, Worldbreakers and buy those back.
Okay.
So we could actually build a ramp deck that made sense and works.
All right.
Also, if you're filtering, you'll find your Dragon Lord of Tartars.
I like Worldbreaker. I like Worldbreaker and the self-mill.
Yeah, combo.
And...
Synergy. I also like Traverse the Oven Worlds.
I mean, I'm a big Traverse head.
Yeah, big fan. Also, do you know what Traverse sets up? Wastes, so you can cast Ruin in the Wake on time.
What about Oath of Nissa? That's an enchantment. Go to self-mill.
It is. Yeah, that's a lot of things that spin the wheels. Also, so what's interesting is if this deck is mostly spells. Do you remember like the green red Goddles ramp deck from the Pro Tour that Brad Nelson played? I'm picturing something along those lines. And so if you play Oath, you actually mostly just have lands. Like you have a handful of creatures. So you're actually lighter on the ramp things.
Sure. I understand what you're saying. Okay. So
you actually like the Oath won't be an option as much.
So you have to play like Kozilek's Return and more spell style because you need like that defensive turn before Okay. That makes sense.
And then we can just board in like Tireless Trackers and like Dark Dwellers and stuff.
Board into like mid rangey like
yeah, just to like kill their stuff. You know what I mean?
Okay.
This sounds interesting.
Yeah. I wonder how good the ramp style stuff will be in Standard. I mean, it seems like some of the stuff going on in Standard with the other decks, like the Spirits deck.
They seem very like anti-ramp.
Like
Spirit seems tough. Like what is nice though is like the Kozilek's Return buyback is off of triggers. But like if you cast your Kozilek's Return and get spell quellered, you're kind of tough. That's tough.
You got to self mill it instead, and then just cast exactly. Rollbreaker. But the problem feels just like. Also, it's almost too little too late.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's probably not too little too late if it happens, but you might just be dead before you ever can
cast.
Yeah,
but also, like, Selfless Spirit to you, the dude that the Dauntless has torn.
Oh, wow.
But you also...
I didn't even consider that card for Standard. I wanted to play that card Modern. I didn't even consider that.
I think the Blue-White Spiritualists have been seen have...
They do have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it seems totally... It's a totally reasonable card.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, getting a bunch of clock creatures in your deck is
pretty... Okay.
Also, like... Elder Deep Fiend seems tough against this deck because they just tap you down on a turn.
Wow. Yeah, they just like, even if you get off the Splendid Reclamation and you're about to cast Emrakul, they just like upkeep Elder Deep Fiend you.
Tap your things and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah. Alright.
Take five. Jesus.
I think there's something there, but I'm off it as far
and
as
I'm off it because of the context in Standard, not because I don't think the deck is.
Okay, fair enough.
I think
what does this deck lose after rotation? Like, not a lot, right?
No, I assume not. I mean, there's just Origins and Dryden's of Tarkir. You lose Dryden Lord of Tarka.
Oh, I wasn't even going to play a Tarka in this deck, right?
I'd play
because
one.
If you're playing Emrakul, why are you even going to bother with a Tarka?
So I can traverse for it earlier and I can cast it on time.
Yeah, but is it even that much more expensive than
Emrakul? I mean, on the turns when you like traverse and you're setting up, I would like to have it as a bullet. But I understand.
I guess I see
your point.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I assume that Mindslaver is just better than Atarka's ETB.
Sure.
I mean, certainly the body of Emrakul is better than Atarka, right?
Yes, 13-13 is very good.
That's better than 8. Is 13 higher than 8?
Sometimes. In some countries, yes. It is true.
In some countries. All right.
But yeah, I mean... So, we're all about the tangents. Yeah. But Splendid Reclamation is definitely one of those cards that's like, it's a really interesting card. And so I talked about Scapeshift and stuff in Modern. What was your idea to break Splendid Reclamation in Modern?
Oh, I just want to mill myself and then put my entire deck into play. And I assume that I win somehow. I don't really think that you need... I didn't think that you would need there must be. So if you have like a Hedron Crab or whatever, and you've milled your entire deck, and then you cast this, don't you just mill them?
Right.
Like, doesn't it just kill them?
For sure.
So isn't there must be some way to like
offset these things?
To construct a deck in such a way that like. I don't know, it just kills them when you cast this if you've milled a reasonable portion of your deck.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, maybe Valakut is an easier way to do it.
Possibly. I think, well, the thing about Valakut is, like, it can interact with their board if you don't kill them. It can just, like, blow up their clock, and then you say go, and then you play, like, a land, and then you start killing them.
But the thing I like about the self-mill is that, because, like, Hedron Crab is a really good card, I think. Also, all the lands you play, so like, you can self mill lands, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can also just like
play
fetch lands.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you want to do that anyway with Hedron Crab, because obviously that's more triggers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about like, okay, you get back stuff, and then, like, even if you, like, return more, if you return a bunch of stuff, you mill them a bunch, and they're still not dead, and then you just crack those fetch lines again, and then that, and then they're dead. Like,
yeah, my worry with this, though, is, like,
they'll just kill your drone crab.
Yeah, your deck does nothing when you don't eat your drone crab. That's, like, the main concern.
Crab loaf, Hedra.
Yeah, poor guy. There's not, like, an opposite... I guess there's Countryside Crusher.
What do you mean there's not, like, an opposite?
Well, so I was thinking Balustrade's Ply.
Yeah.
There's not a card that... I guess Countryside Crusher is, like, the opposite of that, right? It mills all the lands and lets you hit spells.
Yeah, with Countryside Crusher, you never draw a land. It right, just right. mills all the lands.
Right.
I mean, maybe that could be in this deck.
Yeah, I guess you just play, like... You could play a really silly deck where it's
you
just
play, like, just Life from the Loam? And, like what if you played, like, a more value land sure. strategy in Modern?
I mean, I was thinking about a deck that's just, like, doesn't this deck just kill on turn four a lot of times if you don't get... If your Countryside Crusher doesn't die, if it's just Splendor Reclamation and, like, Countryside Crushers? I guess you can hit other Countryside Crushers. You draw those.
Oh, turn. It's like a...
Like, 52 lands, 8 card spells... style deck.
Oh,
and
it's
just four Countryside Crushers, four Splendor Reclamations, and Valakuts.
Wow. That's the whole deck.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, then if they just kill your Countryside Crusher, you're just real sad.
Well, I mean, you just need lands that do stuff, right? You just get to play, like, every mad land.
You need to put, like, four Ranger Ravine, four Treetop Village.
But you need enough mountains to self-mill yours.
Yeah.
This is a hard deck. This is kind of like the zombie infestation
treasure hunt
deck.
It is a lot like that.
Yeah.
Which is not known for its competitiveness in Modern, but...
I mean, maybe you just put this in that deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually... It sucks that they go into play, not your hand. So you could, like,
well, I mean, does it? You get to... I mean, here's the thing, is that the fact that they go into play is, like, super busted.
Yeah, that's the busted part.
That's what's gross about the card. Is there a land that, like, if you untap with it and a bunch of mana, you just win? What about, Kessig what about, Wolf like, Kessig Wolf Run? What about Dark Depths? You just remove all the counters from Dark Depths?
Probably.
I mean, unfortunately, it's banned in Modern.
Oh, shit. Not
for this reason.
They
knew. Not because they knew people would put so many lands into play that they would be able to make Merit Lage the hard way.
The hard way. It's just 30 mana.
It's too
right?
good. It's 30 mana, yeah.
It's a lot of lands. yeah, that's interesting.
So you can't do Dark Depths.
You can do...
What about Lava Claw Reaches? Is like
yeah.
an attacker that you can pay X
and just kill yeah.
and just kill them.
You can do that. You can do if you have multiple copies of Stencia Bloodhole, just drain them.
So one of the cool things is like so you could play like Lava Claw Reaches. Well, you just put a bunch of Traum lands in this deck. So you Splendid Reclamation.
Oh, and so you put
and you just like assemble Tron,
right?
So, and you assemble Tron very easily because half your deck's in play and
mm-hmm.
you just have Tron.
Yeah, and you can play cards like Sinner Wayfinder, Definer, Tron.
Yeah.
Okay, this is interesting.
I just think this card is like
right,
real open ended. There's
yeah.
a lot of ways you can go and like. What lands you want to play is super interesting to me.
Yeah,
that
the card is so... It's
this,
just like,
this,
it's
this,
the most open-ended card possible.
Yeah, this card is like probably like way more fun to talk about than it is to play with.
Right,
right like it,
probably you're doing something very linear and probably janky
if you're playing
play
with
it.
But trying to figure out what the linear janky thing you're supposed to be doing
mm-hmm.
is a super like fun exercise. Are we done with it, though?
I mean, I'll probably text you in, like, an hour on my drive home.
And be like, yo.
And be like, yo, I forgot about this thing. yeah, I mean, it's just, like, one of those cards. It's just super
Do we talk about Sigarda's Aid?
I think we did a little bit.
We did? I think this card's pretty sweet, too. I'm a big Sigarda's Aid head. I know you hate it. I can tell already you hate it. But... This is another one. Did we talk about trying to break this one too? About
yeah.
having yeah, we did right.
Well, Pure Steel Paladins. And stuff.
Yeah, I don't think the Pure Steel Paladin really makes or
no.
this card brings much to the Pure Steel Paladin.
No,
strategy.
It's really with actually a Stone Haven Outfitter. The dude whenever a creature that's equipped dies, you What you do is, listen to this. So you can do a bunch of zero mana equipment, Stonehaven Outfitters, like Blasting Station, and like also have living weapon creatures.
It's a crash charger you control. So
usually with Stonehaven Outfitter, you play a thing, you sack the creature, you draw a card.
So you Blasting Station. Okay, so you Blasting Station. So like you have living weapon creature, right? You put the living weapon creature into play. You stack the triggers so that the living weapon trigger resolves first, and then you sacrifice the creature before you get to move it for free onto another creature.
Right.
Okay. All right. I think I believe that works.
I think so.
Because living weapon's a trigger, right?
Yeah. And so
and this is and this the Sigarda so movie could, thing is a trigger. You could
end up with like having your Stonehaven Outfitter just have a bunch of equipments on it. If you put a bunch of living weapon creatures first,
yeah,
and then you could. I have
to why remember. Why do we have to do like basically like why is the living weapon blasting station part important?
Well, it's just like you just have creatures to sacrifice them and you draw cards.
Well, what about see? I was just thinking, just like what are the equipments that are just super expensive to equip and cheap to cast?
Yeah, the problem with that though is then when you don't start in play,
they just then your don't deck's do terrible. Okay, fair.
Do you know what I mean? That's like
my yeah. I mean, equipment's kind of barely do anything anyway. What about the aura side?
The aura side? The aura side's interesting. Really good with the totem armor. One's really good with that.
Okay, fair.
There's like an instant speed to put my iron armor. It's pretty solid.
Can't think of anything too busted.
No. I have to like go look through Gatherer.
All right. More research is needed on this
more
one.
More research. We'll come back.
All right.
Do we want to talk about another super weird combo-y card?
Yes, that's all I want to talk about. Tree of Perdition.
So, the 013 4 mana defender that you can switch his toughness with your opponent's life total.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you can exchange target opponent's life total with their toughness.
Yeah, exchange is very...
This one is really more about the combos that don't work with it.
Yeah, so... One, Tristan Dectrophobia does work. You like, play this, play Tristan Dectrophobia, then another turn, you switch, and then you untap, and they're at 13, and they die.
Yes.
That works. Something that doesn't work, Tragic Slip doesn't
work. What doesn't work about the Tristan Dectrophobia is that I don't believe it's even remotely playable.
No, me neither.
It seems like...
Very unplayable. Very you have a bunch of 24 drops.
Yeah, you have two terrible. It's Tristan. And the odds are five or four.
Four.
So
the odds are that like when you get this in play, they probably hit you for 7 damage, and you're also at 13.
Yeah, there's that. There's that defense, the draw the game defense. There's also just like, just kill your creature, kill your Tristan Dectrophobia. There's also like. After I do the exchange, after that resolves, I just tap my pain land.
All right,
that's the real that to me is the real concern is like pain lands are legal with these two cards in play, and if your opponent just has a pain land in play, you just can't combo.
Your combo just does nothing.
Yeah,
and a lot of people play pain lands.
Yeah. It's like I don't think that I think that makes this, but I think that by itself invalidates this as like a deck.
Yeah,
for not sure. As a combo, but as a deck. I mean, maybe after rotation, there won't be pain lands. I guess that's true, right?
Yeah, after this rotation, there will not be pain lands.
Okay,
as far as we know. Yeah, that's probably. I mean, all these things are true. This card is super casual. Like people, it's a really cool card.
If it worked with like mirror, like Twisted Image or whatever, then
yeah. The problem, though, is anytime you do the exchange, those things check on resolution.
Yeah.
And so anything you do to make your thing of zero toughness doesn't work.
Exactly.
So you have to, like, give it -12/-12 or something to be
Yeah, and there's, super like, no effective. Even cards that do that.
No, everything does just -13/-13.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this card is...
Even Shivan Meteor does 13.
Yeah, I know. It was Future Sight foreshadowing. But, yeah, Tree isn't a really... It's a neat card. It's a good card that they made.
So it's weird. I actually played the old tree of redemption. I played it in a birthing pod deck, and I as a one good. Of, and it was very good. It was like a really good card to get against mono red, and like they would get you low, and then you would just set your life total to 13, then pot it away for for a Thrag Tusk.
Yeah, it was really good. But you could also do things where, like, you could put your life total to 13, and then they, like, they ditch it down to, like, 2 or something. Let's say you're at 7 when you first activated. Then you're like, all right, go to 7. It would just gain you, like, a ton of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was very powerful.
It was also really good with Tristani. Those were the same. So, right. Yeah, they were the same format.
Tristani, gas.
Because what you could do is then you could, like, make it, like, a 0-38 or something insane because you had a ton of life. And then if they ever got you down, you're just like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, you could also... I remember one time I comboed off in Momir Basic with Wall of Redemption and Sarah Avatar. Do you know, it might not be called Wall of Redemption. What?
The white one from Conflux that, like...
Yeah, so at the end of your turn, you gain life equal to the toughness of... Or the maybe the power, actually, of the... Of the it's toughness of the biggest creature.
It's a 1-5.
Yeah. You gain life equal to the toughness of the biggest creature you control. And then Sarah Avatar's power and toughness are equal to your life total. So every single turn, I would just double my life total.
Savage.
And I won the game.
Yeah, that made sense.
I had a 350 something star avatar or whatever.
Did you not cast like a 9 drop so you didn't finish?
No, yeah, I didn't cast any drops, so it just did nothing.
You didn't need to.
My opponent just could not win.
That's awesome. Speaking of another really cute combo card.
Oh, the Harmless Offering. This one is a cute combo in more ways than one.
The art is very cute. So the combo you can play with this in standard is Harmless Offering to Monarch Pact.
Yeah.
You're like, it's on the last move. Good luck.
See, I think that one actually probably has legs more so.
Yeah, because Demon Pact's like a pretty reasonable card. And then you can just play Dark.
Yeah, Demon Pact's actively good for the first 3 turns it's in play.
Yeah,
right?
The whole turn is what we call diminishing returns. So the interesting thing, though, is you can play like Dark Petition. Mm-hmm. So you can just play like 1 Harmless Offering and a couple.
Yeah, yeah. And
you can
just...
also play realistic cards that like remove Demonic Pacts. You can play like Solomdar's Command.
Mm-hmm.
You can play does Unsubstantiate, does that bounce your own things?
It can only bounce creatures, I thought.
I think it's on.
It's definitely creatures. Not definitely cannot bounce lands.
Okay, return card, spell, or creature does bounce.
Yeah.
Okay, that's unfortunate. But yeah, you can Solomdar's Command it, which is like a pretty reasonable magic card. Harmless Offering obviously does not do a ton, like, when you don't have Demonic Pact in play, but it is definitely an interesting card. I don't think there's not any other cards in Standard that work in a way which are, like...
No, I mean, there's definitely other ways to get rid of your Demonic Pact. Like, there's lots of good ways...
I guess, like, a card you could get rid of, you could give them as, like, a Mind Rack Demon, if they're very low in life total.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, you wouldn't want to harmless.
Are there any like drawbacky spells you want to give your opponent?
I don't know. That is a cute kitten, though.
Very cute cat. Oh, no, it's like the two tails. It's just like...
Hi!
Just a little duder. Just turning into an Eldrazi.
Yeah, that is not a harmless cat.
It's not harmless. Run away!
I don't know. Are we just talking about, like, full-on looking for things that actually kill your opponent, like Demonic Pact? Or, like, how... If you're moving outside of Standard, right? If you're moving into Modern, there is...
Top Modern's awesome. It's, like, the playground.
Yeah, Modern is the playground, for sure. I guess there's, like, what is it called? It's not the one that they used to play in Tricks, because that one's 20 life. There's like a 10 life version of
Illusions of Predator.
It's called Delusions. Maybe called Delusions of Grandeur.
Okay.
Or something, I don't know. It's basically half.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think that card is legal in Modern. There's got to be some other like gross downside cards in Modern, right?
I assume so. Like, there's no like packed creature, right? They're all spells.
Yeah, there's no packed creature. Man, maybe they're like just what else has the text like you lose the game on it? Maybe we could just do a quick gatherer search, but
yeah. No research a lot. No, I'm kidding.
No, rousing the internet during it.
So we just need the text that you lose the game.
Yeah, I'm looking for the text. You lose the
game. Gatherer is awesome. Ooh, Abyssal Persecutor.
Abyssal Persecutor, that's a good one. That is a good one. Alright.
That card's pretty sick, actually.
Alright. Demonic Pact. Wow, the Demonic Pact's gas. Forbidden Crypts and not legal in Modern.
Immortal Coil.
If Dash you touch, you prevent that Dash.
There are no cards in your graveyard, you lose the game.
Immortal Coil, apparently, does it.
You could do, like, Rest in Peace Immortal Coil, Immortal Coil, and then give it to him. Or I guess, you want to do, Tormod's Crypt, because it targets
Lich's Tomb. That is legal Modern.
You don't lose the game for having zero less life. Whenever you lose life, sacrifice a permanent for each one life you lost.
I guess they just sacrifice this. That doesn't really do much, right? Off it. Don't want to give them Platinum it. Angel.
Platinum Angel's great. Nope. All right.
So basically, it was Demon
Pact and Abyssal Persecutor.
And Immortal Coil. Yeah, Immortal Coil is.
So let me read this card because you guys obviously don't know what this card does. So. 2 black artifact, tap, exile 2 cards from your graveyard, draw a card. If damage will be dealt to you, prevent that damage. Exile a card from your graveyard for each 1 damage prevented this way. When there are no cards in your graveyard, you lose the game. So you should, like, play Immortal Coil, say go, you don't take any damage, and you exile some cards in your graveyard, you untap. You play Tormod's Crypt, exile their graveyard, Harmless Offering.
Them. You just kill them.
The problem with that, though, is if they have a fetch land in play, they just put a card in the graveyard. But I guess you can.
No, not even. So, if it. I guess a fetch land does work because it's not damage dealt to them.
Yeah.
But I was about to say that, like, fetch land actually would trigger if damage.
Oh, yeah.
To the one damage.
You could, like, bolt them and then they have to.
Yeah, they bolt them and they lose.
Mm-hmm. Or Demonic Pact them. I assume they're in the same deck.
Yeah, I mean, this card is kind of cool anyway.
It's a cool card.
It's like.
The pun's really good too, like the Mortal Coil.
The Immortal Coil, and then you're just like, you can't die because it just prevents your stuff. Because you're just like, alright, whatever. And then you just can just, like, draw cards until you find the Harmless Offering.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't totally
think this is particularly good.
Abyssal Persecutor seems like maybe the most promising of them.
That card is sweet. That's actually, like, a legitimate card. Like,
yeah, the problem with this one is, like,
real slow.
Your opponent. No, it's not even that. Your opponent can probably just, like, they're just likely to be able to get rid of it.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, like, you still just then have to find another way to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, all giving them an Abyssal Persecutor does is, like, playing a Platinum Angel. You know what I mean? It's like...
Mm-hmm.
And it has the same problem where... I don't know.
But, yeah, Harmless Offering is pretty... Definitely a cute card. Mm-hmm. Adorable. But I think...
It's Totes Dorbs.
Yeah, Totes Dorbs. It's a definitely an interesting card with Demon Pact, though. Like, I think that's a legitimate... Like.
Yeah, it's weird that, like, maybe the best iteration of the combo is actually just legal and standard.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me think that it's, like, not that good.
But. Yeah, it's kind of like a plant kind of thing.
Yeah.
They also broke the reserved list rules. So they said that...
No, this card's red.
No. But so, like, they said, on the reserved list, they say they won't reprint the specific card, but they also won't reprint cards that are functionally the same. So they won't reprint, like, Dunderground Seed, and it's a blue, and it produces blue and black.
Uh-huh, stuff like that.
But, so this is a red donate. But it's red. So
it's not functionally identical. It's not functionally the same. Yeah.
But it's a card that's
You can't pitch it to Forza, Will.
I know. You can pitch it to Pyrokinesis, though. Or Fury of the
That's Lord. Arguably better.
Yeah, arguably.
You could argue that.
You can't be that.
You would be wrong.
In Limited, probably Pyrokinesis is way better. Another card that I really like and probably will be the last card we talked about is Thalia's Lancers. Have you seen this card, Maxwell?
Yeah, dude. This is a switch you're putting in Show and Tell?
Sure. That's fine. No, you put this guy off a sneak attack, and then you...
Well, that's what I mean. It's sneak and show. Yeah.
So Dio's Lancer is 3W for a 4/4 with first strike. And when he ETBs, you can search a library for a legendary card and put it in your hand.
Oh, it's not legendary creature. It's legendary card?
Card. You can get oaths. You can't get planeswalkers. They're not legendary.
You can't get oaths.
But you can get oaths. You can get legendary lands.
You can get dark depths if they're legal in your current format.
You should get...
Mythkos.
Did I say that like that?
No.
Okay.
You could get Jidy and Nithkos.
Yeah. Jidy's very good to go. Yeah. Trying to think what else you can get. You can get other legendary lands in Standard. Westfield is not legendary. No, it's not. You can get that new Sanitarium.
You get Pendlehaven.
You can get Pendlehaven.
Gyre Reach Sanitarium's legendary?
Yeah. There's only one.
I did not know that. Interesting. I'm off it.
Do you know what's really good to discard a Dire Reach Sanitarium? The second Dire Reach Sanitarium. but yeah, this card's really interesting. Like, this card is actually really sick because it combos really well with Gisela and Bruna. So okay, Bruna can rebuy humans. And so if you just hit this guy, you can just play your Bruna and then get this guy.
By the way, Bruna just rebuys the Gisela.
No. Bruna actually has other text. So Bruna says...
Wait. I mean, I understand that, but it does do that also, right? You turn target angel or human.
Yeah.
So if you already have a dead Gisela, you just get the flip.
To that. Okay. Or you can go to Thaddeus Lancers and then tutor for Gisela.
Sure. But why would you... Okay. But what I don't understand is... Wouldn't you just be playing the maximum number of Giselas instead of playing Thalia's Lancer? I mean, clearly this card is better on rate than...
And then you would play, like, 4 Gisela, like, 2 Thalia's Lancers, and 1 Bruna. So if you don't draw Gisela or they exile it, you can just play Thalia's Lancers, don't get Bruna, and then...
Well, what if they exile Bruna? Here's mine.
Sure, maybe you play...
Also, how good is, like... realistically, and I'm a kind of a big doubter on the Gisela. Like, I think the card's fine...
I also have a doubter, but I think that this is interesting.
Okay, I think basically the front side of Gisela is a good card. I don't think it's absurd or anything. I think it's a good card, right? I don't think Bruna is good.
Yeah, Bruna is 7 mana. 7 mana is just it's just so much mana.
Okay, yeah. Can we quickly touch on the Emerge deck?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, we can.
Real fast.
Yeah, go.
I think Emerge is sick.
Busted?
I think anything that lets you cheat mana costs deserves, like, the hard look.
Yeah.
The hard look. And I think Elder Deep Fiend's the truth. I think we want to sacrifice some Mana Reshapers. I think... I don't know. I'm not exactly sure, like, if it's Mono Blue or... What did you think? Blue Red?
I think Blue Red's interesting because of the interaction with Kozlot's Return. And so, like, you can cast this thing ahead of schedule and buy back your Kozlot's Return. And, like, you can have, like, Jace filtering your draws, Tormenting Voice filtering your draws.
Okay.
Also, like, you discard
extra. But what do you, like, things. What kind of deck do you play that you have a good creature to sacrifice and also playing Kozlot's Return?
So, like, the creatures you have are, like, Mattery Shaper. I think you play Eldrazi's Tidespawn or two.
Well, then you don't really want to play Kozlek's Return with those creatures, right?
Sure, but, like, you can discard... Well, like, one, with Stasmoner, you can, like, trade up. So, like, Stasmoner plus, like, Kozlek's Return's, like, 4 damage on something if it attacks. Also, you just play Jason Tormenting Voice to discard the Kozlek's Return. So maybe we just never actually cast it. We just did it in our graveyard.
Well, what I'm saying... Okay, I understand that. Like,
yeah, and I understand that, like, that won't always happen. And sometimes you'll have... A dumb closer turn.
No. It's not even that it won't always happen, but it's just like, if I have all these, if I have, like, a bunch of Eldrazi Sky Spawners in play, I don't even want my Kozlek's Return triggering, necessarily.
Yeah, and you don't have to.
I guess it is a May, right? Yeah. Fair enough. I guess you don't have to, but, like...
No, I see what you're saying.
But, like, was like, why is that the payoff?
Sure.
When it seems like...
I mean, that's honestly, this is something that I just saw, like, Jerry Thompson talk about.
Oh, okay.
I
don't mean to give you the third degree about it. I mean,
I don't want to plagiarize either. I don't want to be like Melinda Trump or whatever her name is.
I think it's Melena.
I have no idea. But
We're pretty informed here.
Yeah.
At the Minecraft.
Minecraft podcast.
You would probably get a lot more listeners if this was the Minecraft podcast.
A Minecraft podcast would be super boring, though.
Yeah, I'd be like, I moved a block.
Yeah.
Watch out for that little...
Yeah, the Minecraft strategy is not as deep.
Yeah, but you can build computers inside of a computer or whatever. Wow. Using Minecraft logic gates.
That's pretty interesting, actually.
It's a Turing complete whatever.
Anyway, so Blue Dream would emerge. So, yeah, I do think that the Emerge deck is definitely... Like, Elder Deep Fiend... It's just so powerful. It's just like...
Yeah, Elder Deep Fiend's really gross.
That card is just insane.
Yeah, I think that card's, like, super, super the truth. I even, like, some of, like, the uncommon ones seem good.
Mm-hmm.
Abundant Maw.
The one... I like the one that puts stuff on top of their library, too.
Which one is that?
Lashwood Lurker?
Dude, this one has Flash, too. Hold on.
Yeah, it does itself Hexproof. The Crab.
Yo, even that one.
Crab didn't give it to you.
Honestly, like, the Flash is like, super good, right? Like,
yeah.
Flash Emerge is, like, really disgusting combination.
Yeah, it's just, it's, like...
Because you just play in response to removal spells, and you're just like, alright, well, you got wrecked.
Yeah, got wrecked.
So, obviously, like, Elder Deepfiend's, like, I guess... Oh, this one, yeah. Lashweed Lurker, dude.
Just puts their stuff on top. Non-land permanent.
Like, Temporal Springs, anything?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not land.
Not land.
Temporal Springs, any non-land?
Which is pretty good.
For 5, it's so really for green. 7 total.
Mm.
Dude, you know that... That's what I said. What did I say when I first... I said I wanted to make it blue-green, right?
Yeah.
And you were like, nah, that card is too bad or whatever.
Mm.
But...
What? The Fall Emissary you're talking about?
Yeah.
So Fall Emissary is the 3-mana creature that... When it ETBs, you look to the top 4 and you put a creature card among them into your hand.
And yeah, then how is that too bad?
Well, it and then when you get sacrificed for Emerge, you make a 3-2 horror. Yeah, I mean, I think the the body is so small. And Elvish Visionary, it's like a
so wait, yeah, but like, but isn't don't the best Emerge creatures cost 7 total?
Yeah, so then you want 3 drops that are good to sacrifice because...
Yeah, because he curves perfectly. Like, mm-hmm. It goes Foul Emissary right into Temporal Spring, your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that this card is, like, not impressive,
mm-hmm.
but he fills, like, that specific role
he's
in
like,
the deck.
He's, like, very Mata Reshaper-y.
Yeah, but I mean, you could play 4 Mata Reshaper, 4 of him,
mm-hmm.
and... still have a functional blue-green mana base. I mean, Yavkost is legal.
Yeah.
Right? I think you can. I mean, these cards don't require that much colored mana.
Yeah, and you can play things like... maybe this is like a Cryptolith right deck. I think Evolutionary Leap seems really good in this deck. Like,
yeah, Evolutionary Leap's interesting. Skyspawner's super interesting.
I mean, also, like, Deathcap Cultivator just lets you turn...
Are you playing Mimic?
We can play Mimic.
I like the Mimic. I like the aggressive bent, especially if you're going to play a Temporal Spring.
Yeah, and, Temporal Spring and a Tap 4
and
permanence.
And a Tap 4 permanence.
Would you play Thought Knotseer and, like, Reality Smasher in this deck?
I would play Reality Smasher. I probably would not play Thought Knot.
That's interesting. I feel like you'd want some number of Thought Knots.
Especially well, if you Thought Knot doesn't like to get sacrificed.
Are you playing Sanctum of Ugin?
Ooh.
Because it
that reduces the cost of the Emerge creep. Does it reduce the Emerge cost?
No. So Sanctum of Ugin's the one that two.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
really dumb.
I literally cannot tell the difference between the
Sanctum
two.
And Shrine?
Yeah.
That's fair. No, Sanctum's the one that you get to tutor. So you could be like, Temporal Spring your thing, put on top,
and then you're also like, sacrifice my thing.
And then go get another one, and then next turn you're just like, Temporal Spring your Temporal Spring your thing again.
Yeah, I'm playing Sanctum
also,
of Ugin.
Also, you can just Elder Deep Fiend do the same thing.
Well, you need a new thing to sacrifice, don't you?
Well,
you can't
just
do that.
Well, no, you can just sacrifice the giant thing and then just pay blue green.
Oh.
You just sack the first one to the second one.
Jeez, that's lit. All right.
And it's, like, free because you got off a land.
Huh.
And what's nice, too, is, like, let's say you, like, do your turn 3 thing, and you're, mm-hmm. like, Elder Deep Fiend, and then you sack your land, and you go get... a Thought Knotseer, that way you can just still recast it the next turn. Because you only have 4 mana still, because you sacked a land.
Right.
So you can go to Thought Knotseer and then play that on curve. That's like the appeal.
Well, I mean, if I was going to play, I might play one Thought-Not if I thought that, like, if I was tutoring for it. But I just feel like the way I was thinking about the deck is, like, all right, I'm playing Mimic on turn 2, Foul Emissary on turn 3. On turn 4, I'm playing Elder Deep Fiend or the thing, and I'm shipping, or the Temporal Springs.
The issue with Eldrazi Mimic and Elder Deep Fiend is that Elder Deep Fiend wants to be cast on their upkeep, and Mimic triggers on your
side. No, I don't care. I'm tapping all their blockers.
Okay,
fair. I just tap their blockers and just ship for 5, and then the next turn, I don't know, do it again? Play a different one, play the Temporal Spring one, like, whatever, like...
Yeah, I mean,
just jam. How many times do you have to hit them with these huge creatures for them to just lose?
Not very many.
Yeah.
Would you play, Deathcap Cultivator in this deck? The 2-mana dude? He's a 2-1, he attacks well.
Okay.
Also, you can
tap for mana and sacrifice him for a merge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually interesting because of the way, it's kind of like a Foul Emissary in that it's like almost like a 3-mana creature that you can play
on turn 2 and it'll let you play multiple 3s and things like that.
Yeah, it doesn't have the upside of sacrificing that Emissary or Reshaper. No,
but the assumption is that, like, these cards are just so good. Like, Elder Deep Fiend's so good.
Like, it barely matters.
Yeah, it's just like you don't get the value, but, like...
Well, this thing about with a deck like this is, like, the value is important because... Okay, so the value... So if you think about what a merge is, it's card disadvantage, right?
Yes.
So the value is important because you need some way to recoup for the fact that you're playing these card disadvantageous spells.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's an important element of it. I mean, it might be that Cultivator's worth it. It gets, what is it, just get Death Touch when you have Delirium? That's other ability. Like, medium relevant. I don't know how easily these decks will have Delirium.
It is pretty medium. But it is a 2-1, so it attacks mediumly well.
Yeah.
In our tempo deck, I like having 2-1 mana dorks as opposed to 1-1 mana dorks.
Well, I like having 1-drop mana dorks, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, it's 2-bust. 2-bust.
Apparently, Land of Werewolves is too good of a card.
In this format, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, Land of Worlds is not a scary card in the abstract, but the way that they make standard where, like, if you're on the play and you play and your opponent just played a 2-drop and then you played a 4-drop, they're, like, so boned.
Yeah. I mean,
like, the difference in power between what you get for 2 mana and what you get for 4 mana is enormous.
Imagine, like, that the context that you just gave why Land of Worlds is so two W printed standard,
mm-hmm,
is the exact reason why Elder Deep Fiend seems insane.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's just like, if you're on the play and you're just like, tap your things and you don't get a turn 4.
Yeah.
I put a 5/6 into play.
Like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what I like about, I mean, that's a good reason for, like, I think that speaks well for the Emissary in that, like, okay, my opponent knows the Elder Deep Fiend is coming, but, like, what can they do?
Yeah,
what are they going to do? Just cast their removal spell on my terrible creature?
What do you think about Unsubstantiate in this deck?
I mean, if you're literally, like, the blue-green tempo strategy, I think it's very reasonable.
Right, because it's like you can, like, bounce their spells, or you can, like, use it later after you've, like, tapped out. This is definitely a deck you want to play, like, up the curve.
Mm-hmm.
So then having, like,
you want to use all your mana every single turn, and, like, even if that's just, like, bounce a creature, that's often going to be fine if on the following turn you could tap all their lands during their upkeep or something.
Or you just, like, leave it up, and they're, like, you, like, play a 2-drop, and then they're, like, they, like, miss their 2, and you leave up Unsubstantiate, and then go ahead, bounce your
thing. Yeah, I mean, it clearly plays well with the other Flash Emerge guys. Like, anything with Flash plays well with a card like Unsubstantiate.
What do you think about something like, I mean, this is a weird card, but do you think, like, Pash Guardian is playable in this style deck?
I don't even know. Is so that the one green, when it comes into play, the other creatures you control get +0/+3?
No. So this is a card from SOI. It's 4 mana, 4/3, discard a land card, put a 2/2 wolf into play. It's the Flash. It's the busted limited uncommon.
Oh, okay, sure. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
I didn't see that. I remember there was a deck.
I want to play 3-drops so I can curve into...
That's fair.
What about that 3... You know which card I'm talking about? 1 green, 3/3.
All other werewolves and wolves you control get +3/+3.
Yeah, but what if we're just playing it as, like, a Flash creature?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, what if you play Void Grafter? That's a Flash creature, too. The 2.4 that gives your stuff hex proof.
Wow, I forgot about that. Is that guy? That guy's insane. I mean, he's not actually insane. But
insane is
he's not actually insane.
Little strong.
Insane is a little strong. That's fair. Wait, he just costs one green blue, right?
Yeah. Devoid.
One green blue to void. When it enters the battlefield, a creature you control gets hexproof until end of turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like he would be really good in it. This is the card I was talking about, Spirit of the Hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, this card would not go in the deck because it just doesn't do anything. Yeah, I kind of like that Flash dude, though.
It's interesting. Emerge is just, like, one of those things where it's, like, you build your deck in a way where you draw your Emerge cards and you do these curves, and they're, like, really good. And
you I kind of want to build the Emerge deck now. Like, I want to build, like, blue-green Emerge.
Yeah. I'm afraid of the lack of interaction. But if you play, I think Unsubstantiate kind of changes things.
Well, I mean, with the Temporal Spring guy, I think that, like, solves a lot of the problems. Like, you only need to
bounce one thing.
Yeah, you only need to, like, get rid of something enough so that they die.
What do you think about Solumdar Sorcerer? The 3-mana Flash dude, you sack a creature, counter their creature.
Okay.
He's really good.
What is that one from Dragons of Tarkir?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
You know what Carmel's about,
right? Yeah, yes.
I think it's interesting because it's like you want to fill your deck with stuff that wants to be sacrificed, and then you can do stuff.
This guy's only if you Emerge it, right?
Yeah, the Foul Emissary, yes. That's not it.
Okay.
Emissary says only if you toss it to pay Emerge costs.
Yeah. I wonder what the correct number, like, Emerge is a challenging from a deck building perspective, like, you have to construct your deck in such a way that
it's like,
you have enough food for them. Like, and it's not obvious to me like what that ratio is supposed to be.
No, and I think Mattery Shaper is sick in between because it's just like a really good value laden.
Yes. Yeah, and whereas like Foul Emissary is like, okay, you're a dedicated Emerge deck, and that's fine because I want to be a dedicated Emerge deck at least to start.
Yeah.
See, I might just like build this deck just to see.
Yeah, see what it's
see how it feels. Spin. Yeah.
I mean, Elder Deep Fiend. We said it 100 times. This card is really good and it's starting to change standard.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like trying to figure out the home for it and everything.
Misbind clicking people. Like it just has. It's so flexible. You can blow them out in combat.
It's Cryptic Command misbind click combo.
Yeah, it's like
it's just in one card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
Flash on the Emerge card is just so disgusting. It's like, I don't know, man. How could they ever cast a removal spell into your open mana, like, ever?
Yeah, and your deck, after, like, turn four, your whole deck's probably, like, pretty flashy.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of flash components.
It's pretty flashy. Aw, yeah. All right. That ends the podcast. B, this kills the man.
B minus humor. Cut. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Mindcrank Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our random musings through Eldritch Moon as much as we did. You guys found the podcast. Good work. Keep it up. We will soon be doing a website update, so our website will be looking a lot better, hopefully, pretty soon. And you can check out upcoming content at flipsidegaming.com. You can find the podcast on SoundCloud. You can check out iTunes. It has it on there. It's nice and easy. Just subscribe to the podcast, and I'll let you know when we put out new episodes. And you can also find it on mtgcast.com. My name's Connor Bryant. My Twitter's at Connor of the Pure. Max's Twitter is at @mono_brown.
Yes.
Decent.
That is correct.
Decent Twitter name. Deece.
Yeah, it's really good. It's great, actually.
Actually, it is really good. It's really good. I'm not Connor of the Pure on Magic Online, though. Someone snuck.
Well, I'm not Mono Brown on Magic Online either.
No, but it's just so I want to be Connor
of
the Pure.
You want to be Connor of the Pure. I get it.
Right. So that's a tilt. So we'll see you guys next week. I'll try to get over my tilt over not having Connor of the Pure as my username on Magic Online. And we'll see you guys soon. I hope you guys enjoy.
Get over it.
Yeah, probably not. Years of deep starring. But anyway, see you guys next week. Hope you enjoy week one of Eldritch Moon Standard.